This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the April 12, 2021 For Your Benefit radio show. We have a packed hour today. Myself, Bob Lyons, I'm an accountant, co-host Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefits Director at NITP. And we welcome Kim Weaver, Director, External Affairs, and Jim Courtney, Director of Office of Communications and Education, Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. By the way, Kim and Jim are from the TSB. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Morning.
All right, we have...
Good morning. Good to be with you.
And likewise. We probably could do this for 2 or 3 hours, but we're going to pack a lot into the next 55 minutes. Just to start off with a general question, and then we can go off on tangents and the like. The new L Fund went live last summer. How have the participants responded, or better yet, how has the general public responded to it? Did you have a lot of people fund it? Was it kind of...
We have had people move into the L funds, and participation continues to grow, largely driven by the automatic enrollment of new participants. So new participants are auto-enrolled in the age-appropriate L fund, and now that we have 10 L funds in 5-year increments, it is more precise. And so we have, you know, young service members who are now being enrolled in the L2065 fund. And what we've also seen is a slight uptake in transfers into the new L funds. And what we think is happening is a result of the work that Jim and his group do. We send out our annual statements. We sent out emails last August letting people know that the new L funds had been launched, and that causes people to take a moment, look at their accounts and make some changes.
I find it interesting. Sometimes I'll work with federal employees who have, you know, their money in the TSB, of course, and then they'll have 50% in, let's say, the L2030 fund, and then the other 50% in the G fund. So is that how they were designed to work?
They are not designed to work that way. The L funds were designed to be the single fund that you would invest in. But of course, we never know what people's outside investments are. Right. So to the extent that people do, what we used to see were people, we see a whole bunch of combinations, but we did see people investing in the L2040 and the L2030, basically creating their own L2035. Right. So that was sort of logical. But the investment that you described is probably not what was intended when we created the L funds. But again, we don't know what that participant has in their outside the TSP investments, and it could make sense in the broader scheme of things.
That's right.
Right. And Tammy, the question you asked, though, is similar to one that one of our board members asked us within the past year. And this board member was concerned, are people using the L funds correctly? And I think Kim said it right, which is we don't know what else is going on with our participants, you know, so it may work for, you know, it may work on an individual basis. But what we did do is we did look at the data, and the overwhelming number of people participants who own an L fund, they own one L fund. More than 80%, you know, own just one L fund. So most of them are doing, what you would expect them to do.
Allowing the L fund to diversify for them.
So
exactly.
If you were to look at the activity of the L fund new participants, people transferring money in from the other funds, or maybe they're moving it in from other sources, what makes the L fund attractive to them just, I'm not saying that you were to say this is the only reason they do it, but what do you feel, excuse me, is the reason that they move the money in the L fund versus another one?
I mean, the reason we do the L funds is that they're professionally designed, diversified portfolios that allow you, you know, in the terminology, to set it and forget it. And so every year our chief investment officer reviews with the board the allocation of the L funds, and we do adjust them slightly, and it allows you to invest in that. It is rebalanced regularly, and to the extent that you are not an investment expert, I am not an investment expert. That's why I invest in the L funds. It is one way to take the stress out of saving for retirement, I believe.
You mentioned the term rebalanced. So when the TSP rebalances something in a fund, do they do that based on input from the participant, or is it just to maximize the dollars, or both?
I'm not sure what the question is.
When the term rebalance is heard, somebody might say, well, what's that? And is that automatic, or does somebody ask to be rebalanced?
Well, as it pertains to the L funds, it's different than somebody doing it themselves.
Exactly. The L funds do it automatically. So what rebalancing means is if, and I'm making up these numbers, if your target is 20% of each of the five core funds, and the C fund has a bang up day and your portfolio gets to 25% of the C fund and the rest have fallen, it readjusts so you're back to 20% of each of them. And that is wildly oversimplified, but that is the concept of rebalancing.
So in other words, you're doing them a favor.
We are making their lives hopefully a little easier and helping them save for their retirement.
All righty. Now, how many, what's the percentage of people that have their money a piece in each one of the funds? Is that an improper question to ask?
It isn't. I just don't know off the top of my head. I don't know if Jim knows.
I don't know the answer to that one, but I do know that the percentage of participants that own an L fund, it's approaching 50%. We're up at 45, 46%. So nearly half of all TSP participants soon will own at least one L fund.
I think that's great to know that, because I think in the whole, federal workers are experts at what they do for the government, but we're not always comfortable with managing money. So having that tool really does help people stay diversified rather than trying to throw a dart at the dartboard or talk to their coworkers to what they're doing. So I think that has been helpful to a lot of people.
So Tammy, when you talk to your clients, if you will, mm-hmm. Do you find that they have a feel for the different funds within the TSP? I know you're not there to do financial planning, but
no.
Invariably, something comes up and you may or may not make a comment.
Well, I always ask my clients when I look at their TSP statement, I'll say, well, how did you pick this particular allocation? Especially when I see one that's, you know, kind of lopsided where they'll have some money in an L fund, they'll have some in C and maybe a little in S. It looks like a real random thing. And it ends up that's what it is, because they either talked to somebody 10 years ago and that's what they did and they've never changed it. So we do have some people today who still are a little bit in the dark about how to manage their money. So I always suggest, I say either, you know, work with a financial advisor if you have other money, or the L funds are a great way to stay diversified and kind of plan for your future.
So when you look at the different funds and the like, would there be any companies drop from one fund versus another because maybe they had a bad time or do you rebalance to try to catch a rising star, or that's not the name of the game? The name of the game is steady as she goes.
Yeah, we the TSP is passively managed, so we follow an index, so we don't drop companies for any reason unless the index has been rejiggered by the people who create the index. And again, we're not – the thing that I think people sometimes don't understand is we're not looking to beat the index. We're looking to match the index, and that is the whole concept of passive investing, is you're looking to just match what the market does. It's a different way of thinking about how you're investing.
Well, the TSP has changed the way catch-up contributions are made. What did you find the response to that was? Good, bad, not so sure, I'll give it a try. And why do you feel that maybe some of the people would like the way the catch-ups are made? That's pretty hard to tell. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, so I'll give that one a shot. So just to level set for our listeners, the IRS sets limits on how much people can contribute to their TSP. And so if you're under 50, the limit is $19,500. If you are in the year that you turn 50 or, you know, any year after that, you can contribute an additional up to $6,500 more. And they call that, the shorthand for that is catch up. It's catch up contributions. You're catching up perhaps on those early years when you didn't, you know, when you weren't able to contribute to the IRS limit. So what we did, we worked with some really smart people. One of the smart people that works at the TSP, they looked at the people that were doing catch-up contributions. And so most were doing it correctly, but believe it or not, about 25% of them were doing it incorrectly. And the example I'll use is, a person who's over 50 was contributing $100 in regular contributions and then $100 into catch-up. And the problem with that is with that first $100, that participant was never going to make it to $19,500. And so that extra $100 that was earmarked catch-up was not going to be matched. It was not eligible for matching dollars. So that's one data point. The other data point I'll give you is that if you look at FERS participants, there were FERS participants who were getting to September, October, and they were reaching that IRS limit, and they weren't doing catch up. So the example I'll use is somebody was contributing $1,000 a pay period. Well, sometime right after Labor Day, they were reaching that IRS limit, and so they were no longer eligible to contribute, even though they were over 50 and they were eligible to do catch-up contributions. It was two elections. So what we did is we created what some other plans already offer, and we call it spillover. And so now you make one election contribution. So the participant one who was doing 100 and 100 is now contributing 200, and it's all getting matched. Participant number two, who's over 50 and contributing $1,000 a pay period, when it gets to mid-September and they've reached the limit, that money then spills over and gets earmarked as catch-up. So they get to contribute. They get to continue contributing rather than just maxing out. We talk about easy buttons. The L fund, is an easy button. Spillover is another easy button. You pick a contribution amount. You can always adjust it throughout the year based on, you know, how you're doing. But you can pick it, and it's the smarter, easier way for people to do catch-up contributions because there's less math. There's less math involved. There's less opportunity to get it wrong. And so how's it going? We think it's going great. We are just a few months in, so we'll have more data the longer the year goes on. But we hope to see a continued decrease in the number of FERS participants that max out early.
Very good. Andrew, the ever-efficient engineer, has told us it's time to take a break, and we'll listen to what the folks at WEPA, the sponsor of the show, can do. And we'll come back and we'll start off with a question. I believe the TSP annuity could be a better option for federal employees. Any major changes planned? We'll pick that up on the way after the spot.
Over 46,000 feds choose WEPA to be there for their life's biggest moments. Group term life insurance is a smart option if you're looking for coverage that'll help meet your changing needs. At WEPA, eligible employees can apply for up to $1.5 million in life insurance regardless of salary. We also offer other coverage options such as group short-term disability insurance or a chronic illness rider. WEPA has been serving civilian federal employees for over 75 years. Get life insurance on your terms. Visit waepa.org for more information.
WEPA helps provide coverage today that will protect your tomorrow. Group term life insurance coverage is important to have while building your future. Whether you're saving to buy your first home, starting your first federal job, or beginning a family, establish your WEPA policy now, and you can carry it with you into retirement. WEPA has been ensuring the future of civilian federal employees for more than 75 years. Find coverage that fits your future by visiting waepa.org today.
Tammy Flanagan and myself, Bob Lyons, welcome back, the listeners, and also where you have the pleasure of having Kim Weaver, Director of External Affairs at the TSP, and Jim Courtney, Director of the Office of Communications and Education at the TSP. So we had some really good information. I couldn't write down everything that you said, but there's maybe to start back to the focus. We got these questions, and one of the questions is outside of. We get email questions too, so we take the best of the email question. I believe the TSP annuity could be a better option for some federal employees. Are there any major changes planned?
Not at this time, no. The annuity set out in statute, and so there are provisions of the annuity that are required by law. In general, the annuities are not one of our more popular options. Only roughly 1% of our participants purchase annuities. Jim and I were talking before the show that what we don't know is we made changes to our withdrawal options back in the fall of 2019, and it is possible that withdrawal flexibility will make people take a second look at our annuity program, but we just don't know that yet.
Hey, Kim, could I ask a question about the annuity program in that,
sure.
Let's say I purchase an annuity with some of my money, maybe $100,000 of my $750,000 balance, just to shore up my monthly cash flow. And then let's say 10 years from now, I decide, well, boy, I'd like to buy another annuity. Interest rates are better. Can I piggyback and add a second annuity from the TSP, or is it a one-shot deal?
Nope, you sure can. You can it's called laddering annuities, and yes, you can do that.
Okay, that's good.
Tammy, you brought up a point about the investment and the ability to monitor change. Do you find working with your clients that the people fully understand the opportunities within the thrift?
As far as withdrawal options?
To make money.
to make money for the future. They've all seem to have done a really good job making money in the thrift. I think the TSP over the years has really, I have to applaud their efforts in making sure employees understand the importance and the value of savings. So I think, is that true, you guys, Kim and Jim? Is the TSP kind of ahead as far as the percentage of federal employees who get that full match, the 5% matching? Over private sector employees. I don't know that you ever compare, but I feel like federal employees do a really, really good job of saving.
I'm going to let Jim handle that one.
So, okay. Oh, sure. So We're approaching 80% of our FERS participants are receiving the 5% match. So that's pretty good. And we expect that number to continue to go up. One of the things that we launched on October 1st was, if you are a brand new participant to the TSP, instead of auto-enrolling you at 3%, we're now going to auto-enroll you at 5%. This is new participants. So before we launched that new auto-enroll at 5%, we were at about 77% of FERS participants contributing at least 5%. And so now, as we're auto-enrolling people at 5%, you know, inertia should kick in and that number should just continue to go up, which is great. How that compares to the rest of the world, we did have some studies done a few years ago, and it's my recollection that that contribution rate is about 10 percentage points higher than say the private sector. So I think I think TSP participants are on a slightly better footing, have slightly better behavior than their private sector counterparts.
Yeah, where I saw some people not getting it was in the CSRS system, because I think they understood that their system wasn't integral with the thrift. They didn't need the TSP to retire, and some people failed to take advantage of it. And I think they wish they had done so 30 years ago if they're still working in the government. But some of them did, and then some just chose not to do it. But yeah, with FERS employees, I feel like they really get it. I just worry about the increased contributions to FERS for new hires. And you know, that's now 4.4% they have to contribute to FERS. Hopefully that doesn't discourage them or make it impossible for them to save as much as they need to in the thrift.
All right, let's do some stats. How many participants receive the 5% match? In other words, I would think it's widely known, but what's your feel?
It's roughly 80%.
Wow. All right, and of course, everybody's going to got this, I'm sure. How many millionaires are there within the TSP participant base?
As of March 31st of this year, there are 84,808.
Oh, my goodness.
And they've been contributing for about 28 and a half years.
I would find that interesting and see how it stacks up against private industry, but I don't think private industry's got those specs, and I don't think they could with all the different companies. And then is there an average account balance within the TSP?
The average account balance, if you're a FERS participant, your average account balance is $166,000. If you're CSRS, it's $177,000. If you're Uniform Services, which combines both the legacy and the new system, it's $35,000.
It's the newest members of the thrift.
Yeah, for BRS, it's only it's 8,900, but that group has only existed for 2 years, so they're doing pretty well for people who have only been contributing for 2 years.
Yep.
Well, let's try to get more to contribute with the next question. What were the administrative expenses for 2020?
So the net administrative expenses for 2020 was 4.9 basis points. So put another way, about 49 cents for every $1,000. And so I'll let you guys comment on that, but it is low, compared to the rest of industry.
Yeah, I'm trying to do that in my head and I can't do it because it's such a small number. Anyway, I suppose I could use the calculator, but I'll take your word for it. I mean, that's pretty nice bragging rights, isn't it?
We're proud of it.
It is. And yet we sure are, yes. And so we let participants know in the annual statement. We let them know when we're teaching classes. We let them know that this is a really special program. It is low cost, and it's a good place to have your money.
All right, here's another. I'm not making these up. These are email questions. They seem to come more prolifically when you all are on. Not that the other ones are bad, but here we go. I will finally start to withdraw money from the TSP in January 2022. How soon can I apply, and what forms would be needed? How long does the process take? And I'll stop there.
So, You apply online. You go to My Account. You log into My Account through TSP.gov, and you fill out the withdrawal form. And you do it, you know, maybe a week or two before you're looking to have it done. And it takes, once the form is done, it takes 3 to 7 days for you to start receiving your payment.
Yeah. One of the things we talked about before the show, Kim, is that people who are retiring in the future, like that person is saying January of 2022, there's really nothing they can do right now to set that up, right? That has to happen after they separate.
Exactly. When you log into My Account, you only see the options that are available to you. So like if I logged in, I would not see the withdrawal option because thankfully, I've got a job. And once you are separated and your agency has provided us with that separation code, then you'll be able to put in your withdrawal request.
Right.
All right. This, we've been focusing just in the last minute or two on the withdrawal options. How about the reverse of that? How long is there a lag time between when somebody joins the federal service and when they first participate in the thrift? Or is it 100% because they've heard such good things about it? Or is it, does it take a while for somebody to say, I really don't feel comfortable with any money coming out? And then after they maybe listen to shows like this or read articles, they go, maybe I can put some in. So is there a lead time between date of hire and first blush with the TSP?
No, because people are all enrolled now.
Okay, that's right. For civilians, exactly. There's your first paycheck. You know, we will auto enroll you. You will be auto enrolled, and your contribution will be 5%, and then you have the opportunity to change that. For the newest members of the military, the BRS, the Blended Retirement System folks, there is a 60-day. They are in the military 60 days before they pop up on our radar screen, and that's when they are auto enrolled. And they don't get a match immediately. They make the contributions, and their match kicks in later.
I would think that's a pretty smart strategy to say, okay, you're in it, and if you want to get out of it, I'm talking about new hires. What's not to like with the match and the ability to, you know, maybe everybody doesn't appreciate rates of return and the like at a beginning career. Maybe they haven't been around information like that. But it's a nice, it's really, I think they do the new employee a favor. Do you get any thank you?
Sure. And the sure. I mean, yes. You know, yes. Participants do. They send us comments, and so you know. So we do see them. But to your point, if you look at the FERS population, so more than 90%. It's at about 92 or 93%. I'm fuzzy on the exact number, but let's say 93% of FERS participants are contributing. So they're not back to about 80% of them are contributing 5%, but, you know, 93% are contributing something. So there's only 7% of our FERS civilian population that are getting the 1% government contribution, and only that because they're not contributing anything themselves.
So, Tammy, here's a question to Tammy. Tammy and I teach Tammy a lot more than I. But what do you find that people don't participate in the thrift, and you must say something like, you can't say too much because you can't be accused of pushing somebody in a manner in which they don't want to be pushed. But what do you find they don't get, and why they haven't put money in the TSP? Tammy?
Oh, you're asking me?
Yeah.
So why aren't people contributing? Well, I don't usually run into folks who aren't contributing because I'm talking to people towards the end of their career. And somewhere along the last 30 or 40 years, they've caught on to why they need to do that. I do meet people who say, man, I wish I would have known 30 years ago what I know today about how money compounds and grows. So I think these folks can be really great mentors to their younger employees in the office who are coming on board to really encourage them. And I think we see a lot of that in the government where sometimes the senior employees take that role of mentoring to the younger folks, not just on the mission of the agency, but also on things that they can do to manage their benefits and take advantage of the wonderful benefits that federal employees have. Bob, I did have a question from somebody, and I ran this past Kim because it's a little complicated, and she said they're equipped to answer it. Can I ask that now, or do you want to wait till later?
Well, you already opened the door. Let's go in.
Okay. All right. So this is a gentleman who's 65 years old, and he's retired from both the military and civil service. And so he has both the uniformed services account and the civilian TSP account. And he said, all of my TSP is in my military account, and except for a little over $31,000, it's all pre-tax dollars. So it's all in the traditional thrift, except for this $31,000 that he put in while he was serving in a combat zone. So he's wondering, he wants to move that money to a Roth, and he wonders, can I move that directly to a Roth IRA since it was never taxed and I don't ever want to pay tax on it? Or is there some other way he has to manage that combat zone money to get it into a Roth?
Well, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Bob.
Well, the reason the money is in there, it's called earned income. They were able to put money into this because they were an employee of X, all right? So they have earned income and allowed them to put money in. They couldn't just put money in. So that position, then the money's there. But does it come out? Is there a better rate of return, I suppose, is the question.
No, he's just wondering the mechanics of getting it from the TSP. He can't, of course, switch it from the combat zone account to the Roth TSP. Is that right? So he'd have to move it into a Roth IRA if he wants to let it grow tax-free? Or
right,
how does that
right.
work?
That's right.
Well, he can leave it in there and it will grow. It's being invested as the rest of his money is. It's not that it's not
right.
not being invested.
But are the earnings taxable when he takes it out?
The earnings are, yes, the earnings are taxable. So what is tax-free is the $31,000 that was
right.
put in while he was in the combat zone. Mm-hmm. He will be taxed on the earnings. And he can, if he wants to, roll out that just the tax-exempt money into a Roth IRA. But there are, as there always are, tax consequences. So he should talk to a financial advisor so he knows what the pros and cons of doing that.
And might it have something also to do with the plan he's rolling into? Like they may have conditions of whether or not they'll accept the tax-exempt money. So he may have to take it out to himself as a distribution and then maybe take advantage of the 60 days to roll it over maybe?
That I don't know. That's
okay.
Why we would advise him to talk to a financial advisor.
Okay.
Okay, that good comments. Here's another question. I have read for years that the iFund breakdown would change. When can we expect the adjustments to take place? Secondly, why does it take so long to update the fund? I don't know that we want to go there, but well, let's go to the first part. I have read for years that the iFund breakdown would change. When do we project that to happen?
There's no imminent change to the I fund.
Okay, that's well-worded response.
And the I fund tracks the EAFE, right? Some people call
right,
it the
EFA. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the developed markets, the developed countries.
Right.
All right. Now, as all of us have boots on the ground, if you will, talking to classes and talking to people that are maybe referred in and the like. So just, Tamara, let's start with you. What do you find interesting that you get a question and you thought, gee, I thought that was common knowledge that it was already known? Is there anything you can just come with your smiling at me or either same? Ask me something easy.
I don't know if I'm surprised or not, because we do get a lot of questions, and some of them are very basic, but they can be the most important questions. So, you know, we're always happy when somebody discovers something that was common knowledge that, boy, that's really going to break, you know, give them a breakthrough on how they can manage their retirement. But one of the things that surprises me when I talk to recent retirees is the fact that they're afraid to touch that money in the thrift. They're taking out their FERS distributions, of course, because, you know, that's their pension. That's how they keep their health insurance. And sometimes they'll even claim Social Security if they're old enough. But they seem to be afraid to take withdrawals from the thrift. So I was wondering if Kim and Jim wanted to comment on that, or if they see that happening, or if that's just the people that I've been talking to. I just find that interesting.
Yeah, I can't so comment I'll on take, that. I am not sure.
Okay. Right. Other than to say that before we changed our withdrawal options, before we sort of loosened, liberalized more our withdrawal options, I could understand why there was this hesitation. So prior to the fall of 2019, you were allowed basically two bites at the apple. You could take one in-service withdrawal, and then you had, at separation, you had to decide what to do with your money. Or if you were already separated, you could take one post-sep, but then that second one, you basically had to decide what were you doing with your money. Were you rolling it all out? Were you signing up for monthly payments? Were you buying an annuity? And so it's a big, daunting decision. And so the fact that for about a year and a half now, it's okay, you don't have to make that decision right away. You can take your time. You can, you know, you get many bites at the apple. So I think that perhaps that over time, perhaps as people get comfortable with that concept, that that maybe some of that fear of touching your TSP will go away, perhaps.
So they're not just saving it to provide an inheritance to their children, I suppose.
All right,
I mean, some people are. I mean, you know, right. We all approach retirement with different ideas.
Right.
All right, I think it's time for a break, and we'll listen to what NITP can do for the listeners. But I'll have a question, and we'll take it up after the break. Why do I have to take a required distribution?
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial, transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Well, welcome back to the last 13 minutes of today's show. And we started with a question right before the break. Why do I have to take a required distribution? Anybody want to – that one's kind of easy. Anyone want to take a shot at that? Andrew already did, actually, the engineer.
Well, it's because the IRS, for the most part, your money is pre-tax, and Congress and the IRS want their money. They want their taxes.
Well put.
It's the law.
It's the law. Like it or not, the law was very good to us when we were putting money in, deferred the tax to later. Now it's later. And at 70 and a half, or 72, I should say, at 72, that money's been in there for a while. And, you know, if you looked at the lifespan, I'm not a negative person looking at lifespans, but the lifespan, that money hopefully would last us for that period of time together with the best annuity known to the annuity world, the earned annuity with the federal sector. So,
one thing I was going to ask Kim and Jim to provide the audience with, because I find it extremely useful, is all the resources that are available. I guess I don't know if this has expanded throughout the pandemic, but you now have training courses that are web-based, that are live, where people can ask questions. I found those on your website. I also know you have a YouTube channel. So could you kind of give us a little overview of the ways people can learn more about managing and participating in the thrift?
Yes, thank you so much for that question. So we'll start with classes. We'll start with I want to take a class. So for years, within my shop, we have a cadre of folks. We call them the trainers. They teach TSP classes. And prior to the pandemic, a lot of that that teaching was in person. We did a smattering of online classes, but the bulk was in person. With the start of the pandemic, like everything else at the TSP, we went fully online, and so we stopped traveling. And all of our teachers, all of our trainers, started teaching online classes. We call them webinars. So we were doing webinars already. Other people hosted webinars, and we'd come join. Or we started offering a few years ago our own webinars. But now, yes, we are. All of our trainers are offering classes essentially every day, online. And so, and they run the gamut. It's the TSP basics. It's the mid-career. It's the pre-separation, or it's a deep dive on what are the funds, what are the things I can invest in. As you say, they are interactive. They are webinars. So we are, our trainer is talking, and they pause for people to ask questions, and people email in questions just like they do on this show. And so So prior to the pandemic, we would teach in a typical good year, we would teach about 65,000 people, through this combination of in-person and online. Now that we are fully online, we have doubled that number. Last year, we taught 133,000 people, largely online. January, February, there were some in-person classes. This year, we are, since January, we are fully online, and we are on track to do even better than that record number of 133,000. You can catch them live. We post them later on YouTube. You can watch an hour long class, recorded webinar on YouTube. Our YouTube channel, it's youtube.com/TSP, the number 4, GOV, TSP4Gov. In addition to those sort of longer offerings of an hour and 15 minutes, we have a bunch of quick hits. We have 1-minute videos. We have 3-minute videos where you can learn a little bit more about the different funds, or how do I do an interfund transfer? How do I change my contribution allocation? So we have those. So there is this. That is an online sort of video offering. Let's just talk about TSP.gov. There's a whole treasure trove of information on TSP.gov. It has, during the pandemic, we actually completed a redesign of the website. It is, it's not just got a new refreshed look, and the look is great, but we reorganized the information. How did we do it? Well, we talked to our participants. We looked at the data. We looked at what were they coming to the website for? And so, basically they were coming because I'm new, help me get started, or I need to know more about the funds, or just generally, help, I don't know what I'm doing. And so, if you go to TSB.gov, this beautiful, we call it our hero image of a couple of Adirondack chairs. But then right below that, we have walked people right into those three big reasons why they come to the website. And then from there, it is just a deep dive. You can go further down in terms of learning about the funds, about fund performance, about, managing your account, managing the changes. So we're very pleased with TSP.gov as a way to do things. We have social media channels. We do post information on Facebook. We post information on Twitter. When people have questions, as long as it's not casework, as long as it's not involving, personally identifiable information, we can respond to people who have questions that way. A lot of people pick up the phone and they call the thrift line. We have a toll-free number and we have friendly people that can answer your questions. That number is on the bottom of every page of the newly redesigned website. So you can see it there, but I'll give it real quick. 877-968-3778. I'll do it again real quick. 877-968-3778. If you back on TSB.gov, if you log into your account, you can be rooting around and you have a question. Well, there's actually, if you're inside your account, you can actually send what's called a secure message. You can actually ask a question, it will go to some of those same folks that would help you over the phone. They look at those questions and they generate a response typically within 24 hours, a lot of times quicker than that. They will answer your question. So what have I left out here? So we got the website, we've got our in-person teaching, our statements. We mail people. If you go online, you can read your quarterly statement, you can read your annual statement, but we mail people. If nothing else, once a year you get your annual statement. It's got a lot of great information in there. It has one of the enclosures is a message from our executive director. Email, real quick, we have email addresses for about 3.5 million of our participants. And so we send them information from time to time. Five times a year, we send them an email that starts with your quarterly statement is available, your annual statement is available. But then through the pandemic, we have been sending out emails just letting them know about the CARES Act, about the five-year L funds. We send them informational emails just to let them know what's going on. And if we put a link in there, we can see how many people click on the link. The click rate, the open rate is very good on these emails. The click rate on links within these emails is good. The other thing that we look at is the unsubscribe rate, right? We always get emails and there's always a thing that says, unsubscribe if you don't want this anymore. We have a very low unsubscribe rate, which pleases us. It means people do want these emails and they say keep it coming.
Yep. Yeah, you don't do it too frequently, so you're never a pain. I think the other thing I always tell my classes when it comes to leaving federal service is make sure you've kept your address current with your payroll system. And then once you retire, if you move, make sure you update your address as well, because that's one of the ways you communicate. And then the other thing is to keep your beneficiary designations current, because with these amazing account balances, wouldn't it be a shame if somebody passed away and that money went to someone that they had not intended it to go to, maybe like their ex-spouse or something. So be sure to keep those beneficiaries current. And I understand there's a new way that's going to be available to update those beneficiaries, right?
All right. Yes. How about
next
this?
Summer, we're moving to a new record keeper, and new features will be rolled out to our participants. And one of those will be online beneficiary designations. So that I think will be a big convenience for our participants.
Okay. But for the time being, can they fill the form out online and then print it and have it witnessed currently, right?
Yes, they can.
Okay.
Okay, we have the two-minute round here. So, and it could be a sentence. Tammy, what do you find is a repetitive question that you're surprised at from your clients?
Well, a lot of times people want to know, should I move everything to an IRA or should I leave it in the TSP? And I can provide them with a list, and I do that. I say, well, here's all the benefits of leaving your money in the thrift, anywhere from simplicity to low administrative expenses to the oversight to just the ease of doing it. And then there are some reasons why people want to move it outside of the thrift, but I always encourage them not to close their account. You know, leave some money in there so that if you change your mind, you can move it back in.
That's right. You can always go back home. The door is open and they have a key with dollars. Kim, Jim, a 60-second comment on things that you're surprised at.
I have to say, I have talked with participants who lose track of their TSP. Like, we will get questions saying, I know I had an account, but I don't know where it went. And that always, I'm someone who keeps close tabs on my money. And that surprises me. So to the point where, and a lot of the times these are separated participants. So to Tammy's point, keeping your address updated so that we can keep in touch with you will help a lot.
Okay. Andrew was telling us, how much time do we have? Andrew says none. So, Tammy, great seeing you. Great talking with you. Kim, Jim, same thing. I was taking notes so that I can maybe do a little bit better presentation when I do my tax subject and keep them awake. Anyway, thanks for everybody for making time today. Andrew, thanks for running the boards, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.